So we are continuing this particular series called Into the Mystic, looking at some of the symbolism of the Gospel of John. And we're getting toward the latter chapters of the Gospel of John. And today we are actually going to take a look at the final individual that kind of creates chaos because of their actions. So we looked at Judas 2 weeks ago and the betrayal of Judas. And then last week we talked about the denial of Peter when around a campfire 3 times he denies the Lord. And today we're going to talk about Pilate. But then next week we come to this last section of my teaching outline, the safe arrival to shore. We are going to be introduced to the resurrection accounts in the latter part of John. And there's several individuals that are safely brought to shore, understanding that Jesus is certainly the Messiah. The first one is Mary Magdalene, and there's Thomas, and there's Peter when he has breakfast on the beach with Jesus as well. So that's the way we'll finish up this series over the next few weeks. Well, today I want to talk about the stormy waters that were created because of the interaction between Pilate and Jesus. So to begin with, I want us to notice in this section the inner conflict of Pilate. Now, what's interesting to me is that in all 4 accounts of the Gospels, 3 of the accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, we find kind of a sentiment that Pilate is kind of trapped and he doesn't know which way to turn. The Gospel of John gives a lot more text to this interaction, and there seems to be a little bit more edge in John's account. And the reason is, this is the time that we're going to come to the hour that Jesus had been talking about to his disciples, the hour of the cross. Now, when I began thinking a little bit about Pontius Pilate, I began thinking about that old game, Monkey in the Middle. How many of you have ever played that game, Monkey in the Middle, right? So if I was to take out this little stress ball and I was to throw it to Pete over there, let's say Charity here was trying to catch it, he would throw it back, and what we'd find is that eventually she would get frustrated, right? Because we keep throwing this thing back and forth, and what we find is that we are playing keep away. And at first, it's a game, but how many of you have ever played Monkey in the Middle, and you were the monkey that was in the middle far too long, right? And you get frustrated, and you become desperate, and you begin to do wild things to try to capture the ball so that you can put someone else in the middle. Well, what we find is that it's not Jesus that's in the middle, it's Pilate that's in the middle. Because Pilate is the one that's going to be stuck between these Jewish leaders that want Jesus crucified, and yet at the same time, what we find is that he's an individual that is walking on thin ice with Tiberius Caesar in Rome. So have you ever wondered why Pilate does the things that he does? You have to understand that he is the monkey in the middle. And he's trying to keep the peace because that's why he's in Jerusalem in the first place, right? So that there would not be an uprising, that there would not be violence. And he always had a strong hand, and he always showed his power to intimidate the Jewish people. And if there would be a Jewish person that actually claimed to be the Messiah, quickly he was put down and crucified. Well, what we find is Pilate in this situation finds that the pressure of the high priest, the pressure of King Herod, who is the king up in Galilee, he is the one that is pressuring Pilate to make a decision and to execute Jesus. And yet Pilate cannot find a reason to crucify Jesus. He looks at his life and he sees a miracle worker. He looks at his life and he sees a nonviolent person. He is just remembered if the story had been told to him about the episode in the garden when Jesus was arrested, that Peter cut off the ear of a soldier and he healed Malchus' ear. So Pilate is an individual that's kind of stuck. And I want to introduce you to Pilate in this way. All four Gospels mention Pilate, but not in the same way. Mark is the shortest of the account and just basically introduces Pilate as the governor that is going to condemn Jesus and put him to death. Matthew, on the other hand, is an individual that gives a little bit more text and kind of emphasizes kind of the sinister nature of Pilate. But Luke is the one that actually gives to us a second name, Pontius Pilate. Now that helps us out because this historical figure is mentioned in the writings of Josephus and Philo, and the name Pontius Pilate helps us to understand that it's the same individual. Now, in the Gospel of John, what we find is here is this individual that the secular historians, Josephus and Philo, said was a cruel individual, that he was a harsh man, that he used violence in a way of keeping the people suppressed. Well, John is going to give us much more text on this man. He's an individual that was the fifth Roman procurator of Judea. He held office from AD 26 to AD 36. And there were various disturbances over that decade that he had to make sure that it did not lead to a full-on revolution. So according to Josephus in his chronicles called The Jewish War and Antiquities of the Jews, Pilate got himself into trouble with Tiberius Caesar back home. You see, Tiberius Caesar put him there to make sure everything stayed calm. However, Pilate made a few decisions that put him in a less than favorable position with Tiberius Caesar. Well, what were some of those? There are three backstories that we're often not aware of to the biblical text. And these backstories are told by Josephus, the historian, that on one occasion, he brought in the standards, that is, the pole with the banners on it, where soldiers would come into a city and so forth, and the image of Caesar would be on that banner. Well, the Jewish people who held to Torah law believed that any type of image was in violation of Torah law, so it would upset the Jews quite a bit. But yet, he was an individual that was dedicated to what is called the imperial cult, that is, the worship of Caesar. And so on one occasion, his soldiers come in with these standards. Secondly, he wanted to build an aqueduct so that water could flow in the city. But guess where he got the money? From the temple treasury. That didn't sit too well with the Jewish people either. And then finally, a third occasion, the shields that often the soldiers carried were the type of shields that were sometimes set up on display. And they were set up in Herod's palace, again, to promote the imperial cult. Well, it's not that Tiberius Caesar was against imperial worship. However, he didn't want the crowd to be, right, upset and lead to a revolution. So a lot of times the Roman Empire, while they insisted on emperor worship, at the same time, they wanted to try to do it in a way that wouldn't stir the pot and lead to violence. You know, they were wanting the status quo, right? Well, Pilate made some mistakes. And what he did was, in these moments, he made these decisions that put him kind of on edge with Tiberius Caesar back in Rome. Now, John, in his account, will kind of shape the figure of Pilate to become something symbolic for all of us. There's always a symbolic element in John's gospel. So as a literary composition, the amount of text that is in John is to help us to understand that this is the climactic hour, the hour that Jesus has been talking about, and it all resides in this interaction with Jesus. So I'm going to read sections of John, and we'll just make a few comments. So the first one comes out of chapter 18, verse 28. So in John chapter 18, verse 28, it begins this interaction. It says here, "Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas," who's the high priest, "to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, 'What charges are you bringing against this man?'" So the accusation here is quite interesting. Notice that the Jewish leaders, the religious leaders, they want a death sentence on Jesus because they are threatened by his popularity. And yet at the same time, they want ceremonial cleanliness because they want to participate in the Passover. So they come to the palace of Pilate. This is a secondary palace of his, and they will not go in because if they were to go in, then they would be ceremonial unclean, right? So here's what happens. They say, "If he were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." And Pilate says, "Well, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. Well, that's another issue that we won't get into today. But here's the deal. We find that there is kind of a perfect storm that is taking place. You have Caiaphas, you have Herod, you have Pilate, and they all kind of come together. And what we find is that the Jewish people want to put Jesus to death, but they don't want to be the ones that do it, right? Now, they had no problem with that. In the Old Testament, there were death penalties, and they were carried out. But on this occasion, they did not want to carry out that execution. So they're trying to place it upon the shoulders of Pilate. And as they do so, Pilate is resistant. Because what we find is that he sees it as some just religious squabble, yet, right? Why are you concerning me about your religious differences, right? And so what we find here is that he goes on and he then gives them an audience outside. He goes outside. And then it says, "Pilate then went back inside the palace and summoned Jesus and asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?'" There's the accusation. He claims to be God. He claims to be the Son of God. And he claims to be a king. Now, Pilate could care less if he claims to be the Son of God or a rabbi or an exalted teacher of some sort. But once you start using the word king, that's a threat against Caesar, right? So, under Torah law, the Jews believe that Jesus is worthy of death because he's blasphemous. But what we find taking place is that the interrogation here leads to the understanding that Jesus is claiming to be a king and that he has a particular type of kingdom. And this is where the conversation goes. He asks the question, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Verse 34, "Is that your idea?" Jesus asked, "Or did others talk to you about me?" Pilate replied, "Am I a Jew? I don't know anything about your religion. You know, I have no idea. It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" And here's what gets Jesus into trouble. Verse 36, My kingdom is not of this world. Uh-oh. King of the Jews, kingdom. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews, but now my kingdom is from another place. At that point, Jesus has kind of sealed his fate, because now Pilate, as the monkey in the middle, can't get out, right? Once he starts using terminology like king and kingdom, he's a potential threat. Pilate says, "You are a king then." And Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." So Jesus gives some answers that would obviously make Pilate squirm a little bit. "Yes, I am a king. I was born for this." Sort of sounds like destiny, right? I was born to be a king. Now, what am I going to do with this man who claims he has a kingdom? But Jesus qualifies it, doesn't he? He says, "My kingdom is not of this world. I do not come to bring a kingdom by violence and by bloodshed." And so what is taking place is, keep the three backstories in the back of your mind. Pilate is basically trapped. So in this quandary, what do you do with a man who claims to be king? Well, Pilate confronts him, but I think Pilate is aware that Jesus is really no threat. He doesn't have an army. He has basically peasants that are following him. These are the people that have been pushed to the margins. These are the people that have been kept hungry. These are the people who are sick. These are the people that need a physician, right? So what's the problem here? Well, when Jesus says this, he says, "Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." And then comes the famous line, I think that we're all familiar with. Pilate says, "What is truth?" Okay? Now, think about this for a moment. Where there are the crossroads of religious authority and political authority, there's a lot of propaganda. And where there is propaganda, there's a lot of manipulation of the masses. Pilate knows that truth is in the hands of those who hold power. And for Pilate, that truth is the truth of violence, the truth of power. That's what truth is. That's what he's going to hold on to, because that's what he's done for the last number of years. So here we find the interrogation, which then leads to the response of Jesus. As the text goes on, it says here, "Jesus answered, 'You're right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this reason I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me.' 'What is truth?' Pilate asked. And with this, he went out again to the Jews and said, 'I find no basis for a charge against him. But if it is your custom for me to release one prisoner during the time of the Passover, do you want me to release the king of the Jews?' And they shouted back, 'No, not him. Give us Barabbas.'" Now, Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. So now listen to this. Barabbas is the terrorist. Barabbas is the insurrectionist. Barabbas is the one that is leading a revolt. He's been arrested, and he was on his way to be executed. But the crowd wanted the release of Barabbas rather than Jesus, the one who was the healer, the one that was the teacher, the one that had compassion. Crucify him! Crucify him! So now you see the response of Jesus is going to lead him to kind of show that there's really no basis of their charge. Now we go into chapter 19. So Pilate's going to teach Jesus a lesson. Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." Here's this mockery. Here is this pseudo-coronation. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." By now, Jesus is bloodied. By now, Jesus is humiliated. They put a crown of thorns on his head, and they dress him in a purple robe, and what takes place is complete humiliation. Will that change the heart of these Jewish religious leaders? No. The ones that they put up to call out for crucifixion? No. As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify, crucify." And Pilate said the third time here, "I find no basis for a charge against him." But the Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." Now, Pilate had no problem with Jesus being a rabbi. He had no problem with him being a healer. He got a little nervous when he talked about him being a king. But now Pilate is going to be really concerned. When they say he claims to be the Son of God, then this claim to deity is a direct threat against another who calls himself the Son of God. And who is that? Caesar himself. Okay? And so Caesar is considered to be a part of the lineage and DNA of the gods. That would be a problem. What's going on in the back of Pilate's mind? Oh, these three backstories. I'm already in trouble. What if I allow this guy to be let go and he continues to claim that he is the Son of God? What is going to happen to me? The monkey in the middle. Do you see what I'm saying? He doesn't know what to do. Do I let him go or do I crucify him? And the text says, when Pilate heard this, he was more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" He's asking Jesus, "Where is your origination? Did you come from heaven? Are you a Son of God?" But Jesus gave no answer. Didn't defend himself. Kept his mouth shut. And it says, "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have the power to free you or to crucify you?" So he goes back to home base, right? What's home base? Threaten people with violence. Threaten people with bloodshed. And then Jesus says this, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." And from then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. Even then, he found no basis for crucifixion. But the Jews kept shouting, and here's the bottom line. Perk up. Listen to this. This is what forces Pilate's hand. "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar." That's it. "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out, sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. And he says, "Here is your king," to the Jews. And they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. And now listen to the Jews. "You are no friend of Caesar." And then the Jews say, "We have no king but Caesar." They have basically sold themselves out to idol worship, making Caesar their god. So it's not Jesus that's guilty of idolatry. It's actually the ones that are putting him to death. So here's what happens. Jesus says he's a king, but it's a kingdom not from the world, but it is for the world, for the good part of taking care of people and meeting their needs. The kingdom Jesus brings is not from Caesar's world of violent power. Jesus is not going to raise an army to establish the kingdom of God, and he's not going to use violent domination. What Jesus is doing is entering in a world of lies and resetting the world. What we find is, what is truth? The truth is that Pilate and those like him always understand that the only way to survive in this world is by taking advantage of other people, putting other people in their place through violent means. So the symbolism here of John, I think, is the world's arrangement is you don't get anywhere in the world except by looking out only for yourself. And if you look out for other people, it's a setup for failure. Look out for yourself, take care of yourself, fight for yourself, take advantages only for yourself. But what we find is, even though Jesus has been mocked in this pseudo-coronation as a king, Jesus himself, the world sees, and Pilate sees, is a harmless individual in terms of political power. Pilate now has to hold on to the violent arrangement of the Roman Empire, the way it gained its power, the way it gained its territory. So the ultimate blame, I think, for the death of Jesus that will be celebrated this coming week on Good Friday is this storm, perfect storm, of religious leaders who want him dead, political leaders like Tiberius Caesar who want no rivals, and Pilate who has made a bunch of mistakes along the way. In the end, Pilate will give the permission for Jesus to be crucified. Have you ever asked yourself the question, if you know this story, what happened to Pilate? What happened after this moment in time where he crucifies the Son of God? Well, there is a selection of writings called the Nicene and Anti-Nicene Church Fathers that complement what we know from the biblical text. Now, let me give a disclaimer. I want to read something to you, but we don't know if this is accurate or if this is folklore. We don't know, but it's answering this question of what happened to Pilate. Listen. And when Tiberius Caesar, the emperor of the Romans, was laboring under a grievous disease, and understanding that there was at Jerusalem a certain physician, Jesus by name, who by a single word cured all infirmities, he, not knowing that the Jews and Pilate had put him to death, ordered a certain friend of his named Volosanius, "Go as quickly as possible across the seas, and tell Pilate, my servant and friend, to send me the physician, that he may restore me to my former health." And with this, Volosanius, having heard the emperor's command, immediately departed and came to Pilate as he had been commanded. And he related to the same Pilate what he had been entrusted to him by Tiberius Caesar, saying, "Tiberius Caesar, the emperor, begs you earnestly to send him for curing of his infirmity." Pilate, hearing this, was very much afraid, knowing that through envy he had caused him to be put to death, which I think is interesting, through envy that he was put to death. It says here, let me find my place again. Pilate answered the same messenger, thus saying, "This man was a malefactor and a man who drew to himself all the people. So a council of the wise men of the city was held, and I caused him to be crucified." This messenger, returning to his inn, met a certain woman named Veronica, who had been a friend of Jesus, and he said, "A woman, a certain physician who was in this city, who cured the sick by a word alone, why have the Jews put him to death?" And she began to weep, saying, "Ah me, my Lord, my God, and my Lord, whom Pilate for envy delivered, condemned, and ordered to be crucified." Then he, being exceedingly grieved, said, "I am vehemently grieved that I am unable to accomplish that for which my Lord has sent me." And Veronica said to him, "When my Lord was going about preaching, and I, much against my will, was deprived of his presence, I wished his picture to be painted for me, in order that while I was deprived of his presence, the figure of his picture might at least afford me consolation. And when I was carrying the canvas to the painter to be painted, my Lord met me and asked where I was going. And when I had disclosed to him the cause of my journey, he asked me of the cloth and gave it back to me, impressed with the image of his face. Therefore, if your Lord will devoutly gaze upon his face, he shall obtain immediately the benefit of health." And he said to her, "Is a pitcher of such a sort procurable by gold or silver?" She said to him, "No, but by the pious influence of devotion. I shall therefore set out with you and shall carry the pitcher to be seen by Caesar and shall come back again." All right? You following this story? Have you ever heard of the Shroud of Turin? Okay, so the idea of this, the image of Jesus was impressed upon different things like cloth. So Valancius therefore came with Veronica to Rome and said to Tiberius the emperor, "Jesus, whom you have been longing for, Pilate and the Jews have delivered to an unjust death and have through envy," third time it's mentioned that in this text, "affixed to the gibbet of the cross. There has therefore come with me a certain matron, bringing a pitcher of Jesus himself, and if you will devoutly look upon it, you shall immediately obtain the benefit of your health. Caesar therefore ordered the way to be strewn with silk cloths, and the pitcher to be presented to him, and as soon as he looked upon it, he regained his former health. Pontius Pilate, therefore, by the command of Caesar, is taken and brought through to Rome. Caesar, hearing that Pilate had arrived at Rome, was filled with exceeding fury against him and caused him to be brought to him. But Pilate brought down with him the seamless tunic of Jesus, and he wore it on him in the presence of the emperor. And as soon as the emperor saw him, he laid aside all his anger and immediately rose up to meet him. Nor was he able to speak harshly to him in anything, and he who seemed so terrible and fierce in his absence, now in his presence is somehow found to be mild. And when he had sent him away, immediately he blazed out against him terribly, crying out that he was a wretch, insomuch as he had not at all shown him the fury of his heart. And immediately he made him be called back, swearing and declaring that he was the son of death, and that it was infamous that he should live upon the earth. And as soon as he saw him, he immediately saluted him and threw away all the ferocity of his mind. All wondered, and he himself wondered, that he should thus blaze out against Pilate when he was absent, and that he was present, he could say nothing to him roughly. Then by a divine impulse, or perhaps by the advice of some Christian, he caused him to be stripped of that tunic and immediately resumed against him his former ferocity of mind. Do you get the picture? When this cloth is in the presence of Tiberius Caesar, he calms down. When he's out of the room, his anger returns. And when at this the emperor wondered very much, it was told him that the tunic had belonged to the Lord Jesus. Then the emperor ordered him to be kept in prison until he should be delivered in a council of the wise men what ought to be done with him. And a few days after, sentence was therefore passed upon Pilate, and that he should be condemned to the most disgraceful death. Pilate, hearing this, killed himself with his own knife, and by such a death ended his life. When Caesar knew of the death of Pilate, he said, "Truly he has died by a most disgraceful death, whom his own hand had not spared. He is therefore bound to a great mass and sunk into the river Tiber. But malignant and filthy spirits in his malignant and filthy body, all rejoicing together, kept moving themselves in the waters, and in a terrible manner brought lightnings and tempests, thunders and hailstorms in the air, so that all men were kept in horrible fear. Quite a story, isn't it? Is there some truth to it? Don't know. That sounds a bit folklorish to me, right? However, scholars have looked into Pilate, and some have surmised that in regret of crucifying Jesus, that Pilate became a Christian, and that Tiberius Caesar actually martyred Pilate. So we don't know what the actual story is. But the point is that Jesus can bring healing. Jesus brings calmness of heart in a world of trouble. And I guess that's probably the role this story played in the life of the early church. To look upon Jesus is to find the one you have always been looking for. This story of Pilate is a reminder that all of us at times are like Pilate, right? That all of us are kind of the monkey in the middle. That all of us find ourselves in a place where one side is pressuring me to do this, another side is pressuring me to do that. What is the best action that is to be taken? It is to follow the way of Christ and his kingdom. And when we are tempted, like Pilate, to go against our better judgment because he said three times in the Gospel of John, I find no basis of a charge in him. He's innocent. And yet to go against that, to go against what you know to be true because it's to your benefit or to your advantage to do so, always leads to a type of chaos. Did Pilate find the Lord? I don't know. Did he die like this ancient story tells us? I don't know. But the lesson that comes through for us is the lesson of, will we hold on to Christ no matter what? Peter has denied Jesus. But if we look in the lives of all the disciples, after Jesus was crucified and resurrected, all of them, save John himself, who wrote the Gospel of John, died a martyr's death because they consider themselves not worthy to go about a life doing what they want without any consequence, but to be faithful in their following of Jesus, even if it would cost them their very life. And so we're going to close with a song, and maybe Charity, you can get Corey for me, please. And the way we're going to end our service here today is it seems as though Pilate was looking and searching, and he himself asked the question, what is truth? It seems as though he saw the politics of the Roman Empire. He saw the manipulation of the religious leaders. He saw all of this converging into a moment of time. Is life simply full of propaganda? Is life simply full of lies? Is life only that which is controlled by the people who control the media? Or is there a truth that we can hold on to? Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to a knowledge of God in its fullness without coming through me, because the cross is a window for us to see what God is really like. For many people, they still haven't found what they're looking for. But this Easter week is our understanding that Jesus is raised to become the window through which we can see a God of love. I think you'll recognize this song. Listen.